fleeting glimpses of things seen through a veil, darkly. Do we understand the meaning of these visions of life? Why we are here and how little of our existence we truly understand? Tonight we will talk of these things on The Other Side. Welcome to The Other Side. I am Jim Harold. So glad to be with you once again. Now, we talk about many subjects on these shows, and I've said this countless times, but I'll say it yet again because it's applicable to today's show. Of all the things we talk about, I think the most applicable to all of us is the subject of death. Many times we talk about things like near-death experiences or what happens after we die, if anything happens after we die. And I think those are all questions most of us grapple with on a regular basis. Today we're going to talk a little bit differently, but still about that topic of death, because again, you know, we might not see it as the most pleasant thing to talk about, but it's something we all have to deal with, whether it's dying ourselves eventually, hopefully many years from now, or loved ones passing. It's something we deal with. It is very much a part of life. And we've got a great guest with us to discuss the subject. I'm talking about Suzanne Worthley. She is an energy healing practitioner and intuitive who has focused on death and dying for 20 years. She has played a vital role in partnership with families and hospice teams, helping the dying have a peaceful transition and helping families and caregivers understand what is happening energetically during the death process. She lives in Minnesota, and you can check out her website at sworthley.com. Now, today we are going to talk about her recent book just released this year, An Energy Healer's Book of Dying. And we're so glad to have her with us. Suzanne, thank you for joining us on The Other Side.
Oh my gosh, Jim, I'm so excited to be here. I really appreciate you opening up the conversation of this subject matter. It's awesome.
Well, kind of a pleasure to have you on the show. I'm glad you could take time, and thank you. On that branch, why are we so reluctant to talk about death? Why are we so kind of, we put it up on a shelf, we sanitize it, we don't want to discuss it. Why is that, do you think?
Yeah, I think it's exactly the reason why I wrote the book. I think we are uneducated, and you know, no fault of anyone in particular, but I think as a society, we are literally programmed that death is scary and it's final and we don't know anything and we're not sure and et cetera, hence why people have faith. And I think why I wrote this book is from a psychic perspective, there is some fascinating, beautiful, wonderful pieces to death and dying that can pretty much alleviate some of that fear and open it up to the sense of miracles. And I think part of it is simply uneducation. I mean, I don't remember really anybody saying much about talking about death when they were a kid, except my family, because I grew up in a mortician's home. So that was normal talk for us. But boy, did I find out that wasn't normal when I hit about grade school, you know? So I think it literally is, we just don't bring it to the table. So again, I appreciate you bringing it to the table for your listeners, because as a culture, we need to discuss this stuff and to be more open-hearted and open-minded.
And in your bio, it talks about hospice and so forth. What are some of the key things that the dying tell you about that process? Somebody who maybe is in hospice, somebody who knows that they don't have long left. What things do they tell you, and what things might surprise you that they tell you?
I think a lot of times we, as those that are in the caregiver situation, or those that are holding vigil, we might want to say it that way, meaning the family members that are present or not, we don't necessarily know that sometimes when there's what we would call non-responsive or comatose, they can literally hear everything. They are very present. And so be aware of that and be, open to the fact that I can still assist you and help you and be there and talk with you and have conversation with you and support this process, even though my mother or father or whomever is not literally responding, because they are there. And so that support system is very important. Oftentimes what I hear is fear-based information from that client, I'm going to call it, in the bed, because they are my clients. So I'm going to use that word. The client will say things like, you know, gosh, I'm scared of heaven or hell, which is one of the case studies in the book by chance here. I'm scared to, you know, I don't know what it is. I'm scared to leave my family or my home. And so lots and lots of fear-based things are what I get from that client lying in the bed. And so some of the surprising things, however, and I mentioned it in the book case study as well, I think it was fascinating the first time I learned about what we would call omnipresence, meaning I was sitting with one of the particular clients and talking telepathically, this person said to me, "Can you just hang out here with my body, basically, while I go off and say hello to my son who was in Iran or Iraq or whatever the war situation was a couple of years back?" And I sat there thinking, well, isn't that just the oddest request? Sit here with my so-called body while I fly off to see my son. And this to me opened up the whole world of, well, of course, Suzanne, we're omnipresent beings. We don't have to be in one place. We can be all over the place. And so this presence of the person who is dying went off and connected with their child halfway around the globe in a beautiful, wonderful, releasing way. And we need to know these things because in the end result, that child who would have missed his or her parents, you know, funeral or death or whatever, would quite possibly hold guilt for not getting home on time or not being able to be there. And those are not true. It's not the case. We have this gift of our soul being omnipresent. And I think that was one of the most surprising things quite a few years ago for me.
Now, in the book, you talk about the 9 energetic levels of dying. Can you briefly explain to us what those are?
Yeah, I actually started this book not to write a book. I started this book to educate myself many, many years ago while sitting in hospice because I was curious as an early practitioner what the heck was going on with this situation of death and dying from a perspective of energy. And I would almost ask my clients as they were dying, what's going on? Can you show me? And then I would ask their guides or their helpers or the angels or whatever to show me. And as I got show me answers, I wrote them down. And so what I was watching was that being an energy practitioner, I was fully aware of our chakra system. And for those that don't know about their chakra system, they may choose to, which I hope that they do, learn something about them because there are vital life force energy access points. It's what connects us to our God consciousness. And it's our fuel for this vehicle. And these access points are 7 main ones go up and down our spine. And I go to the actual number of 9 in the book because there's 2 more beyond our so-called crown chakra that are relative to the death process. And so basically these steps correlate directly with the shutting down of the fuel, which is the consciousness of that God source. And when that fuel is shut down, the so-called gas tank, meaning the auric template, which aligns with the chakra energy, dissipates. And so we have to think of ourselves as a God source vehicle, because we're a meat and bone vehicle. And then that vehicle needs gas, which is consciousness, life force energy. We can use the words chi or prana. And this comes into so-called fuel my body during my so-called being alive time period of life. And then it's held in a tank, which is my auric bubble or my templates. And all of these are active during my alive period of my incarnation. And they activate in utero and they deactivate in death. And I wrote the book very methodically, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, to give the perspective of how the process works. Not everybody works in that methodical manner in order, but it was the best way to actually teach it. They can jump around.
Now, what is the thing that would surprise people about death that almost everybody gets consistently wrong? Or is there something like that?
Well, I think what I would like to reiterate as a psychic is that, you know, people kind of sort of believe and they have a guardian angel. And I'm here to tell you, with sitting with multiple people dying, they do have a guardian angel because it's one of the first benevolent beings that comes into the room in the death process. And I have seen it time and time and time again. And I think if people would really, truly understand this as a being of source energy that doesn't have a meat and bone body, but it is a being of consciousness that each one of us has the birthright to have. And we come in with this and we go out with this. And if we start to understand that, we open our hearts and our understanding to nobody dies alone. Nobody dies alone. And I think people are so scared, especially during our times right now, that we are dying alone. And isn't that so sad? And I can't get to him or her. And I am here to seriously tell you, nobody dies alone. Nobody. And there's benevolent beings, there's angelics, there's light people, there's whatever we want to. And most all of that correlates with your belief system, by the way. So I'm here again in writing this book to maybe open up belief systems to the fact that we do have help from the other side.
I think one of the things that makes death scary, a couple of things. One is the fear of the unknown, because I mean, yes, people have had near-death experiences and have come back, but it's not like you're taking a trip to France. You know, if you're taking a trip to France, you can talk to other people who have been to France. You know, they've been to France. They brought back their souvenirs. They could say, France is like this. So you don't have to be worried about it. Or you can look it up on the internet and you can see videos. But, you know, for the most part, I mean, that's not as common when we talk about the other side. Of course, I'm not discounting NDE experiencers, but it's not the same thing. So I think that's part of it. Plus, some people have been brought up in religions where, you know, you're going to go to hell. I know I experienced some of that in my teenage years and my upbringing and church I went to. You know, it's like, you're going to go to hell. And, you know, that I think really scares people. Is the fear of dying misplaced in your view?
Well, I think you exactly hit those two nails right on the head. This not knowing is, I think, scary. We humans, for some reason, are not comfortable with the mysteries of life and beyond. And I think that's kind of sad in terms of not knowing sometimes can be a beautiful thing. And we aren't trained that way. And that said, we humans are also, by the way, born with a birthright of psychic skills. And many of us have those shut down because of those dogmatic references that you were talking about just a moment ago. Also, don't open that, don't think like that, don't talk like that, don't believe in that, you know, that hearing voices or knowing things that aren't there. So our birthright of the psychic skill, meaning I can know things, hear things, sense things, smell things, see things, feel things that aren't there, because they are there. They're just there in a different, what we would call plane of existence or reality. And when we open our hearts and our bodies and train our bodies to be able to know, my loved one is still here, you know, going to France or not, I come back from France with gifts and information. Well, dying, I also go to a place with gifts and information. I can still be supported. I can still see my father as I walk down the aisle. He did not miss my wedding, etc. So we shut down that birthright of psychic skills because of these lots of time dogmatic and or family or society belief systems. And we do have the capacity, if we choose, to open up those psychic senses. Now, I'm not going to say everybody is going to see auric fields and everybody's going to see the kind of things that I write about, but we do have the capacity to feel. And what happens is we shut our own experiences down right away because we think that's silly, or I can't do that, or, you know, that psychic Suzanne's got something that I don't. But we do. We all have versions of this gift, and we just don't necessarily allow our bodies to embrace that because these dogmatic belief systems get in the way. I do specifically have a case study in the book that talks about one fellow that was dying who was terrified of hell. And it prohibited, sadly, the experience of the death process going smoothly, because when we have fear in our actual chakra system, it causes dis-ease or distress in the body. And that prohibits this actual transmutation, or, you know, transmuting back to source energy with these chakras and these templates. And so what I always say in any interview is that, oh my goodness, if you learn anything from this, you want to maybe live as if you're dying, because indeed you are. And you will, by the way, die as you've been living. So what we want to do alive is release fear so that our process is easier and it's smoother and it's graceful.
Interesting. Interesting. The dying process, when somebody dies, and I mean, there's people, and I'm in this too. I've not been bedside. I'm 51 years old. I've not been bedside of somebody who's actively dying. And I mean, I think that's very common these days. We kind of shuttle it off to a hospital. I mean, I've certainly had loved ones who have died, but they were in a hospital, or I wasn't there when it happened. That's something I want to talk to you about too, because I know you've done a YouTube video on that. Mm-hmm. But I guess what I'm saying is that many people have never experienced in person the process of dying. What do people get wrong about that? And what is that like, the actual time of death? And I'm almost interested in things like, you know, deathbed visitations, those kind of things. In your experience, what is that process, the time of death, like?
Well, I have been fortunate, and I do say that with all honor and respect, to have been sitting bedside for very, very many processes of the death experience. And it looks all across the board, first and foremost, because everybody dies in their own unique way. But I, again, am trying to reiterate, please do anything that you can to release fear in your life, because it will give you a more healthy, vibrant, beautiful, joyful life as a human being anyway. And it will assist your death process because it will be a smoother transition. That said, there's been very many different kinds of things that happen at that bedside. And I think it's fascinating. One of the most fascinating things that I see at bedside, Jim, is that what I write in the book around that throat chakra area. What we do when we get to that throat chakra area is we don't any longer need our so-called voice. And most oftentimes during the death process, we don't have the capacity to actually articulate with our audible voice. But it doesn't mean that we're not talking and connecting and speaking and hearing. And this is oftentimes when the person at bedside will be so-called speaking, and yet they're not having it audible. And they're looking and they're having a conversation with something or somebody that we don't see. And oftentimes we think, oh, that's just kind of weird, or that's kind of odd, or it must be the medicine. And I'm here to tell you it's not. It's them connecting with their benevolent beings and these light beings and these angelics and these past loved ones that are coming into the room. And the reason why I wrote this book from a perspective of being an energy practitioner is when we allow ourselves to get beyond the fear and we put ourselves into a situation where this is not a scary, horrible, awful ending, but a transition, and I let my body feel not only the process of my loved one dying, but the energy of the room, I oftentimes can feel these shifting energies and this density or this lightness or this buzzing or all of this stuff. And this is what I like bullet in the book, chakra by chakra. This is what is happening from a psychic perspective. This is what is happening in the room, and quite possibly your loved one is experiencing, because I've done so many and I've watched so many, and it's a beautiful transition most of the time. And additionally, I give specific bulleted points of what you can do to assist this person to make their journey easier. And I think that that's an awesome addition to the book, because so many times we feel helpless because we don't know what to do to fix this. And I'm here to tell you there's nothing to fix. All your job is to support with no condition attached. And this is what allows that person to have an easier transition. But again, we humans want to make it all better, you know, and we want to fix everything. And so it's a really great lessons in each of these steps for ourselves as well as for the dying person.
And I thought you did a really interesting video on the question of being present, because I've had people who have passed, well, pretty much everyone who has passed in my life, I've not been there. And there have been specific instances where I felt particularly badly about that. But you talked about, and I never thought about it this way, that in some ways that's your own ego talking. Like, you have to be there. You know, you have to be in control, because it's not as meaningful if you're not there. I thought that was a really interesting perspective.
Boy, aren't we humans amazing when it comes to ego? You know, it's so amazing, and myself included. I need to catch myself quite often. You know, what are you doing here, Suzanne? You stepped in there with ego. When it comes to the death process and we're not there, we are not supposed to be there if we're not there. And that does not put a value to our being. That puts it in perspective of that is a choice from a higher perspective of the soul to die in the way, at the time, with whomever or no others, in the way that they chose from a higher perspective. And it isn't about us. And yet, boy, we egoic humans, we get right in there. And it's like, for some reason, I think my attendance was going to make a difference. And in some regards, your non-attendance is actually the gift of making the difference, because our egoic energies are not in the way. And so I know it's a head flip, because there's a lot of people that I know, friends and family, that hold guilt for not being there for years and years. And as a practitioner, I'm telling you, I have had multiple clients come in I'm still mad because I wasn't at my mom's bedside, and it's been 15 years. Think of the dis-ease that that person, my client in my room at that point, has put on their body for 15 years holding guilt and frustration, when in reality, they weren't supposed to be there anyway. So it's amazing to me how we crossed over into everybody's, what I always call, sandbox. You know, get out of my sandbox. Let me play with my own toys. Just be on the sideline and cheer me on. You know, we need to stay in our own boundaries. And a lot of times our egos get in the way, especially when it comes to the death process.
Let me ask you this, and this is a tough question, I think. What if we're not talking about a loved one? What if we are talking about ourselves? In other words, maybe it's someone who has gotten some, you know, sad medical news, and it looks as though that their time here may be drawing to a close. What do you say to those people? Because to me, that's one of the most difficult things. I mean, and I've even found myself in this situation. I have to tell you something that happened to me recently, and I felt so badly about it. There are only a few things in my life where I've looked back and I just said, wow, I wish I could have a do-over, in terms I felt like I wasn't a good friend, or I did something that I wish I had a do-over on. You know, I mean, nobody's perfect. I make mistakes, but I don't really think I've ever hurt people. But one instance was, I had a coworker, and we weren't super close. We worked together maybe a year, year and a half. And the gentleman had gotten cancer. And, you know, I saw him on Facebook and things, but I never really got in contact because it was the old, I don't know what to say. Mm-hmm. And he got better. And then I thought, well, you know, if I contact him now, it's going to just look like, oh, now that I've got cancer, I'm good enough to talk to for Jim. It wasn't that at all. It wasn't. In fact, I was very concerned about him, but I didn't know what to say. And then very quickly, this gentleman got the cancer back and died. And it was so sad, because a few days ago on my LinkedIn, something came up. It was his birthday. And I'm just like, and that's another topic about these digital platforms and what they should do once you pass, and how do we handle those? And you've got these kind of zombie accounts. But I guess my point is that I felt really, really badly that I didn't contact him. And that was kind of a do-over situation. So I wish I had been a better friend to him and had contacted him. And I think many times people don't know what to say to the dying. So I guess what I would say is, what would you say to the folks who are dying, and then to folks who want to talk to them and interact with them, but they don't really know what to say?
You know, that is probably the best question I've been asked on any interview so far on this book. And seriously, and I mean that, because it's such a vulnerable opening to being a human, and we're all vulnerable humans, and we don't know what to say. And we oftentimes do, because of this feeling of walking on eggshells, we walk away from it, and then we harbor guilt again. So first and foremost, as a practitioner, I would say to you, if you choose, allow yourself to just let that go. Allow yourself to forgive yourself and the situation, because you are human, and move forward with joy.
And it wasn't that my guess is that, compared to people who had worked with him a similar amount of time, I probably was more concerned. But just, it's like, oh, you know, hey, how you doing? You have terminal cancer.
And you know what? I talk like that. And I know I'm always looked at sometimes as crass, because I'm like, wow, you're dying, you know, because I have completely changed my viewpoint. Well, not even changed it. I came in this way for some reason. I just came in this way, knowing this stuff. I knew this as a kid. You get to die. And I say it probably 1,000 times in that book, in one way or another, saying, honor the process. We get to die. And when I say that, people just get their feathers ruffled. But the reality is we get to, and listen to that word, we get to die. And people are thinking that this is happening to somebody, when in essence, if we learn how to work with our so-called Akashic records and soul contracts, and there's pieces in the book that explain what that is for those that are confused, we get to come into this incarnation with a meat and bone body for a finite amount of time to do whatever it is that we, from the higher perspective, chose to do. And when our job here is done, we get to, and I'm going to say that in quotes, bolds and italics, die. We get to. And it's very difficult. You know, people don't have that perspective. We think it happened to us. And even when we're in our 3D body, when we don't re-educate ourselves on this idea, we sometimes still feel like it's happening to me. If I get that diagnosis, I'm, oh my God, this is happening to me. And in my opinion, as a practitioner and a healer again, it's important for us to get back to this space of owning our Akashic record, our higher self, our soul contract that came in here with a higher knowing that this 3D self down here can have the capacity to align with and understand if we do the work. But most of us aren't raised that way, again, with dogma, and we think it's happening to us. And so it's very important for us to look at this differently, in my opinion. I have a lovely mom who's in her 80s, late 80s, and for years she used to go, Susie, I love doing her voice, sorry.
Susie. That's okay.
So-and-so is dying, and or so-and-so has cancer. If so-and-so has cancer, and you have to pray for her to get better. And I would look at my mom and I'm like, no, I'm not going to do that. And she used to get very mad at me. She's like, why aren't you praying for her to get better? And I said, because I don't have the right to pray for her to get better, because my Suzanne 3D opinion of her getting better or not getting better maybe is not her higher self's perspective of healing. Maybe her higher self's perspective was to simply come here to experience cancer and die at a certain age, contracted, by the way, with all of her family at their certain age. There's reasons we leave this planetary existence from these meat bodies when we do how we do in accordance with who we come in and incarnate with. And this is such an important conversation that we don't talk about because we're not taught this stuff. So soul contracts and reasons for being here from an Akashic, meaning the library of the God source, that place knows what's going on here. It's us people down here that need to do the work to remember what we know if we choose to. And again, there's many, many people that don't choose to even think like this. And that's fine too. There's no judgment. All I'm here to say is, because I talk to both sides of the veil quite consistently and have for many years, it's very real. We are here as we choose, how we choose, and we do leave planet as we choose, how we choose from a higher perspective. And we can honor that. And that will take away a lot of this anger. Or I love when people say, you know, she died too young. She didn't get to get married and walk down the aisle. And I will come back with, she didn't sign up for getting married and walking down the aisle in this incarnation if it did not play out that way. And again, I'll get that look like, you don't know what you're talking about. So it's perspective. And I'm not here ever at any time, nor is my book here to change people's belief systems, especially when it comes to the God package. But I would encourage people to open their thought processes, their brain, their heart, their body to the concept of this idea, because it will open you to a world of miracles when it comes to death and dying.
Now, this is going to sound odd to say, but I've read and seen interviews with people who are dying, and they'll make a remark something along the lines of, I'm thankful that this happened to me, that I had time.
Yep.
And I knew this was coming. And I now know this is coming. And I've heard people say, you know, yes, I may have a limited amount of time, but I'm living, you know, I'm still living. I'm still here. I'm, you know, and it's one day at a time kind of thing. But I guess the dying, what do they say about it in terms of positives? Because, you know, we think of life's milestones, and as you get into middle age, the ones out in the horizon are fewer and fewer. You know, you have your first steps. You go to kindergarten or daycare, whatever it is, and then you graduate high school, and then you graduate college, and then many people get married, and then many people have kids, and then the kids graduate high school and college, and then, oh, you can look forward to retirement, and then, oh, Wait a minute. Right. As someone who's starting to see those signposts come closer into view, I mean, are there any positives we can look forward? What do the dying say in regard to that?
Well, I think that, again, is a really interesting to bring forward, in that when someone comes to terms with a terminal illness, for example, we oftentimes will hear them come forward like the Mitch story. Remember that lovely story of Mitch? I don't remember the gentleman's last name, but he wrote that big book. He was the college professor.
And yeah. The last, are you talking about the last lecture? That's Randy Pouch. Yeah. I think it was Ron.
Fascinating. And again, this is the kind of situation where we find the positives in the death process. And what, in my opinion, they're doing is they are actually realizing their true value and worth. And most people, and again, not judging, but most people go through life on the hamster wheel with belief systems that are given to us since childhood of you have to, you can't, you should, you need to, all these churning messages of go, 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 do, 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 be a human doing machine. What the prognosis of death oftentimes does for a person like Mitch is stop that hamster wheel, get off it and go, oh my gosh, I am so blessed. I am so blessed to be here. And what it does is it puts the brakes on of all this false narrative of what we are doing down here, existing as a human, and it re-alters our paradigm to go, I am not only being here in a co-creation of this reality, but this particular meat body reality is only a blip on the radar of what my entire soul experience is. And every blip that I've had in every meat body lifetime is brought me to this space and place. And I can learn from that. And I can be encouraged by where I get to, if I choose to, go next in incarnations, if you believe in reincarnation, which indeed I do because of the work that I do. So this is the difference. We stop the hamster wheel. We get off the hamster wheel. We realize that we have a gift of being here. And I can probably tell you there's a gazillion people that woke up this morning churning off to work thinking, I gotta go to work. And you don't have to go to work, you choose to. But when we get that kind of a paradigm shift, we not only go, I choose to, but oh my God, am I lucky? Because I get to choose to. So it brings joy back into the existence, which confuses so many people, like, oh my gosh, you're dying. Why are you so happy? And so this is actually what happens. We open our hearts to the concept and the ideas of the bigger picture and the eternal picture. So I think if that makes sense to your question.
Yes, yes, yes. And in speaking of the eternal picture, what do you think, based on your years of insight as an intuitive, what you've learned from the dying, the whole picture, what do you think happens to us after we die?
Oh, God, I am so fortunate and blessed. Okay, that just ran through me really. I get such waves of love that come through my body. You can hear it shaking my voice right now. I'm fortunate enough to channel loved ones that have died for others. I just did it at a paranormal event that I just did last weekend. I allow my body to bring forward loved ones, not only in like a holographic way, meaning that I kind of shapeshift and my face changes into their loved one and voices come through me and they talk. And I'm not joking. I know it sounds crazy, but that's what I have a gift of doing. And their loved one will talk. And to be my human meat body, Suzanne, and feel that quotient of love that they still hold for that alive daughter, sister, brother, whatever, that's sitting in front of me at the paranormal event watching this exchange, the amount of love that comes through and connection and support is boundless. And it's really difficult sometimes for my own human channel body to understand the amount of that love and hold that even for that 10, 15 seconds for my client to see. Because it's an energy merge, and it's really, I'm very honored to do it, but it blows me away every time that this is so real. These beings are still there. They are just simply not in a meat and bone container, which they, by the way, have chose to step forward from, and they're still there. Their consciousness is there. Their ability to support is there. Their knowingness, they're watching you, they're being interacting with you. It's all still there. And I know it for a fact because I've embodied it time and time again on behalf of others. And, you know, it isn't like we're up there and I'm not making fun, but we're not bowling. We're not jumping on rainbows. You know, we're not doing all kinds of sleep stuff. But if you want to think that, that's okay too, by the way. If your belief system wants to think that grandma's jumping on rainbows and still bowling with grandpa, that's okay. But the reality is that we are essences of souls that are advancing in our spirituality on that side of the veil, as well as what we're supposed to, if I can use that word, do down here. We're supposed to be advancing our spirituality. And I don't mean dogmatic religion. I mean our spirituality as a soul when we're alive in this meat body. And so these are things that the more that you study this stuff and the more that you get into this world, you start to realize this is endless. Nothing ends. Nothing ends. It just changes.
Well, it has been a great conversation. We've been talking about an energy healer's book of dying for caregivers and those in transition. Our guest has been Suzanne Worthley. Suzanne, where can people find the book? And also, once again, where can people find more information about everything you do?
Great. Thanks for asking. The easiest way, well, literally, you can Google the book title and it'll come up in numerous ways. But my own website, sworthley.com, sworthley.com is my main website. And that gives you lots, by the way, of information and blogs and death and dying videos and all kinds of free stuff on there. It talks about my own online community. It has a lot of great information, plus the book is right there. But additionally, you can find it anywhere on Amazon or whatever online. It's pretty easy. It pops up. So yeah, I encourage anybody. It seems like a weird gift, you know, like, do I really want to get this for somebody? But trust me, we're all going to be in this situation someday. So I think it's a beautiful gift for yourself and for others.
And your website once again?
sworthley.com.
Very good. Our guest again has been Suzanne Worthley. The book is An Energy Healer's Book of Dying. Suzanne, thank you for joining us today.
Thanks, Jim.
And thank you for tuning in to The Other Side. We appreciate it. And today we explored a topic, as Suzanne said, it impacts each and every one of us. And I hope that you found it insightful and enjoyed it. We'll talk to you next time. Have a great week, everybody. Bye-bye.